Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation, Mount Without the 12th Hour in the Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is June 6, 2014, or it is Sivian 9, 2018. We will start our first service today with a song entitled, Until Then. My heart can sing when I pause to remember a heartache here is but a stepping stone along a trail that's winding always upward. This troubled world is not my final home. But until then, my heart will go on singing. Until then, with joy I'll carry on. Until the day my eyes behold the city. Until the day Thou calls me home. The things of earth will dim and lose their value if we recall their borrowed for a while. And things of earth that cause the heart to tremble, remember there will only bring a smile. But until then, my heart will go on singing. Until then, with joy I'll carry on. Until the day must behold the city. Until the day Yah calls me home. This weary world with all its toil and struggle may take its toll of misery and strife. The soul of man is like a waiting falcon when it's released, it's destined for the sky. But until then, my heart will go on singing. Until then, with joy I'll carry on. Until the day my eyes behold the city. Until the day Yah calls me home. Part 3, A Leopard Light Beast, A Shepherd Wife, Volume 2, we're on page 99. We'll do just a little review. And they worshiped the dragon, which gave power unto the beast. And they worshiped the beast, saying, who is like unto the beast? Okay. So they said they worshiped the dragon, they worshiped Satan, which gave power unto the beast. And they worshiped the beast, saying, who is like unto the beast? Okay, so the beast is your Catholic Church government, who is able to make war with him, Revelation 13:4. The question may be asked, how can professed Christians worship the dragon? The answer is easy, and the worship of the dragon can be clearly seen. The present system of worship by the so-called Christian institution is unquestionably pagan. Sunday, Christmas, and Easter keeping, etc., originated in the ancient Babylon from the old pagan religion in the honor of the sun god. Christians in the modern times assume to honor the Most High Elohim with the pagan customs, calling them Christian doctrines. Protestantism has taken a grip on these pagan festivals as a leech on a human body. Okay, that included Gilead Center. she took a, she wouldn't let go of the birthday celebration. And if you hold on to one, you may as well hold on to all of them. So, Gilead Center, when they were tested in 2001, 2002, on giving up these birthdays and showing that they were pagan, and they refused to do it, and the preacher brought the book to me and said, no, we're going to keep doing them. We know what the book says. We know that that's true, but it says we don't do them for that. We don't celebrate birthdays for the same reason that that book said. We do it for a different reason, so that makes it okay. In other words. So, all that tells me is that Rhoda Johnson was worshiping the dragon. He was worshiping Satan. And knew it not. Okay, and all those that stayed with him, especially his wife, she was the one that was the number one orchestrator and behind the birthday celebration. So she was the leader out and worshiping Satan, the dragon. And Rhoda followed right in behind her. Well, isn't that the way it was in the Garden of Eden? Eve was the first that accepted that lie, took of the fruit, and then she invited her husband, Adam, to do the same thing. And he followed right in and did the same thing. And here he is, the king of this planet. Can you imagine that? And succumbing to his wife, his helpmate. He knew the truth. He knew that she had done wrong. But he did it anyway. Brother Johnson knew that his wife was wrong on all that stuff. But he did it anyway. He still hearkened under her counsel anyway. So they were the ringleaders and the co-leaders of the last of the apostolic, last of the antiquical apostolic church of Israel, and the last of the protesting churches. In other words, they brought the tail end of the seventh church, Laodicea, the latest church, to as protesters against the system that they are now worshiping. So how can you protest against something that you've given into and you are worshiping the dragon and that beast just like they are? Okay. As the sluggard sucks the blood unaware, that his satisfaction brings him to destruction, just so with the Protestants and their pagan commemorations, even daring to call them by the name of the Yahshua, blasphemy indeed. Every student of the ancient history knows this to be true. Likewise, every Bible student knows these so-called Christian festivals are unbiblical as well as unchristian. If these institutions were Christian or biblical, they would certainly have been spoken of in the Bible. But since they are not found in the Word of Elohim, Christians had better leave them alone unless they be found worshiping the dragon. For the Jeremiah, looking forward unto this time of the apostasy, said, thus saith Yahweh, learn not the way of the heathen, and be not dismayed at the signs of heaven, for the heathen are dismayed at them, for the customs of the people are vain. For one cutteth a tree out of the forest, the work of the hands of the workmen, with the axe. They deck it with the silver and with the gold. They fasten it with the nails and with the hammers, that it move not. Jeremiah 10:2-4. Though the word declares, learn not the ways of the heathen, profess ministers of the gospel will cut a tree from the forest and deck it with silver and gold. Then dare call it by the name of Yahshua as his Christmas birthday celebration, or call it by the name of Christmas, Christ's Mass. What greater blasphemy can one do? Are the ministers and religious teachers ignorant of these things? Yahshua said, Elohim is a spirit, and they that worship him must worship him in spirit and in the truth. But when I presented the truth to Brother Johnson on this pagan birthday celebration, he decided to hold on to the spirit of paganism and continue to worship the dragon. And here he was, and he knew the scripture here. It says that we are commanded, though, those that name the name of Yahshua and his father, we're commanded to worship him in the spirit and in truth. And we knew what the truth was. We were taught the truth by the sanctuary system. Brother Johnson taught us the complete sanctuary system. He taught us what the truth was. And then he let out and at the end, and he got weary and tired of waiting for things to develop and so forth. And so he just started worshiping the spirit of the dragon. And that's what you call your wholesale apostasy for the whole Adventist church, when the angel of the candlestick starts worshiping the dragon. And that's a wholesale apostasy of the Adventist church, because the Adventist church in all three of her stages, and all three of her steps of the genuine movement, and all three of her feeding pastures, end up worshiping the dragon every time. So it says, John heard the men defying Elohim, saying, who is like unto the beast? Who is able to make war with him? That is, who can abolish the pagan system of the worship? Is there one? Yeah, Elijah. Elijah is the one that's designated that can do this. Okay, and you have an Elijah on the scene today, and that's what we're in the process of setting up and doing, is abolishing this pagan system of worship. They challenge Elohim's authority. It may not be said by words, but it is most decidedly expressed by the action. Isn't that what Goliath did? Then he challenged the king of Israel, send me a man to fight with me. Well, he was on top of it. 40 days and 40 nights. This year, Goliath came out to taunt Israel and their army and the king. Send me a man to fight with me. Whoever wins, we will be your servants. If we win, you'll be our servant for life. Satan would have loved that, to have Yahweh's kingdom committed unto his kingdom for life. Satan would have loved that. But David came to the rescue. Well, David is here today. And this David is come to the rescue again. So it says, but in all things, it says, approving ourselves as the ministers of Elohim, in much patience, in afflictions, in necessity, in distresses, in stripes, in imprisonments, in tumults, in labors, in watchings, in fastings, by pureness, by knowledge, by longsuffering, by kindness, by the Holy Spirit, by the love unfeigned, by the word of the truth, by the power of the Yahweh, by the armor of righteousness on the right hand and on the left, by honor and dishonor, by evil report and good report, as deceivers, and yet as true, as unknown and yet well known, as dying and behold we live, as chastened and yet not killed, as sorrowful yet always rejoicing, as the poor, yet making many rich, as having nothing and yet possessing all things. O you Corinthians, our mouth is open unto you, our heart is enlarged, and ye are, and yet, be ye not unequally yoked together with the unbelievers. For what fellowship hath righteousness with the unrighteousness, and what communion hath light with darkness, and what concord hath Yahshua with Belial, or what part hath he that believeth with an infidel? And that agreement... And what agreement hath the temple of the Yahweh with idols? For you are the temple of the living Elohim, as Elohim has said, I will dwell in them and walk in them, and I will be their Elohim, and they shall be my people. Wherefore, come out from among them, and be ye separate, saith the Yahweh, and touch not the unclean thing, and I will receive you, and will be a father unto you, and you shall be my sons and daughters, saith the Yahweh Almighty. 2 Corinthians 6:4-11 and 14-18. It is open disobedience unto the plain, thus saith Yahweh, that has brought about confusion and disgrace in the Christian world at the present time. True, the Reformers saw not all these errors and were not responsible, for they had no light upon them, as Elohim has given a light upon his word by the degrees making it possible to grasp the truth. He expects us to receive it, and thus lead us to the victory. But one may say, if Elohim could save others with less light, why should he give us more light? Of the many reasons, we shall comment on only two. By the increased light on the word, Elohim is able to save a multitude instead of a few. For the second reason is, as the last part of the church will be translated instead of resurrected, We need sufficient light to prepare us to meet Elohim and immortal beings. This is where we're at today. Just such ignorance of the Elohim's word in the days of Noah brought the world to its destruction by the water, a similar wicked condition reduced to ashes the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah. If in the days of Yahshua just such hypocrisy under the appearance of the virtue required the Son or the life of the Son and Elohim to preserve the world from the destruction, what would the outcome be at this present time? Elohim cannot destroy the world, for he has a multitude to save. He has no other son for a gift to the church, for Yahshua is the only begotten son of Elohim. Elohim's ideal is to bless the world through the medium of his church on the earth, and they unto whom the gospel for the world is committed have left the sheep and are serving the devil in the person of themselves. Where is the hope of the world? For the only answer that can be given is woe to the sinners in Zion. Elohim will gather his sheep. In other words, Yahshua will gather his sheep. He will have a church. But what will be the reward of those who were instructed to feed the lambs and are feeding themselves? Yahshua, who sees the end from the beginning, and with his all-seeing eye focused on the present-day condition, has said, who then is a faithful and wise servant, whom his master has made ruler over his household, to give them meat in the due season? Okay, he says, blessed is that servant whom his master, when he cometh, shall find so doing. Verily I say unto you, that he shall make him ruler over all his goods. But and if that evil servant shall say in his heart, my master delayeth his coming, and shall begin to smite his fellow servant, and to eat and drink with the drunken, the master of Yahshua of that servant shall come in a day when he looketh not for him, and in an hour that he is not aware of, and shall cut him asunder, and appoint him his portion with the hypocrites, with the heads of the beasts, there shall be weeping and gnashing of the teeth. Matthew 24:45-51. Now I have a little comment to make on here. It says, when that slothful servant apostatizes and starts eating and drinking with the drunken, said the Yahshua of that servant will come in a day that he's not aware of. Now that day is a certain set day and an hour that he's not aware of. So that day is the day of vengeance, and that hour is in the 12th hour. So, now you want to know why Gilead Center came to his close when it was in the driver's seat with his hand on the wheel of the ship? Well, Yahshua come and took the wheel out of his hand. When he did that, he was no longer in command of the ship, and Yahshua came at an hour. He came in the 12th hour, closing the 11th hour, and he came in the day of vengeance, starting at the Passover, 2002. That was the day of vengeance. And the 12th hour was also 2002. So it goes on to say, separating the tares from the wheat is our next title. Peter saw a time when Yahweh will judge the church. For the time is coming. Judgment must begin at the house of the Yahweh. And if it first begins at us, that's talking about the disciples, what shall the end be of them that obey not the gospel of the Elohim? 1 Peter 4:17. So Peter is making a statement. If it begin with the leadership here, with us, well, what will be the end of him who obeys not the gospel of the Yahweh? What would be the end of him who enters not into the ark of the safety, but dares bar the way of others? As the prophet saw the day of the vengeance upon the sinners in Zion. Okay. He saw that. Closing out the 11th hour. He saw that beginning of the 12th hour in the last days. And the Yahshua returned from the slaughter. He asked, who is this that cometh from Edom with the dyed garments from Bozrah? This that is glorious in his apparel, traveling in the greatness of his strength. I that speak in the righteousness, mighty to save. for the day of the vengeance is in my heart, and the year of my redeemed is come. And I looked, and there was none to help, and I wondered if there was none to uphold. Therefore my own arm brought salvation unto me. Now, his own arm meaning his own kingdom, the house of David, tribe of Judah, lawgiver, and Yahshua has been appointed as the king of, has come back, and he said, the people that was in charge of my church that I had put in charge of the kingdom, the house of David, said, I came back and said that represented my arm that brought salvation unto me. In other words, he taught the truth and established the truth, and that's what brings 144,000 forth. And that's what brings Yahshua's great army that joins him when he comes back, is the house of David has arranged all of this. In other words, they were teaching the 144,000 that new song. Therefore my own arm have brought salvation unto me, and my fury it upheld me. And I will tread down the people in mine anger, and make them drunk in my fury, and I will bring down their strength to the earth. Isaiah 63:1-6. Fearful is the day that is soon to fall upon the watchman on the walls of Zion. For the righteous only shall be preserved. Those who would rather die than perform a wrong act are the only ones who will be found faithful. Testimony for the Church, Volume 5, page 53. For the separation of the pure from the impure is well described by Ezekiel. Those who are worthy to escape the ruin will be marked by the man with the rider's inkhorn, after which the five men with the slaughter weapon shall smite the class who are left without the mark. Said the Yahweh, slay utterly old and young, both maids and little children and women, but come not near any man upon whom is a mark, and begin at my sanctuary. And they began at the ancient men which were before the house, and he said unto them, defile the house and fill the courts with the slain. Go ye forth, and they went forth and slew in the city, Ezekiel 9:6-7. At this time the tares are separated from the wheat, according to the words of the Yahshua, that both grow together until the harvest, and in the time of the harvest I will say unto the reapers, gather ye together first the tares, and bind them into the bundles to burn them, but gather the wheat into my barn. Matthew 13:30. For the purification of the Elohim's congregation marks the harvest, or the loud cry of the third angel's message. For the Yahweh of the harvest declares that both grow together until the harvest. The wheat gathered at the commencement of the harvest and at the separation from the tares in the church is called the first fruits of the harvest. As John looked upon the company, he heard a melody of the joy, inexpressible, by the human lips, and they sung as it were a new song, before the throne and before the four beasts and the elders, and no man could learn that song but the 144,000 which were redeemed from the earth. These are they which were not defiled with the women, for they are virgins. These are they which follow the Lamb whithersoever he goeth. These were redeemed from among the men, being the first fruits unto Elohim and the Lamb, and unto the Lamb, Revelation 14:3-4. And no man can learn that song. Experience only can tell the joy in the one's heart at a time when rescued from the everlasting ruin and granted everlasting life without the taste of death, merged into the eternity's ceaseless ages, a life that measures with the life of the Yahweh. Confidence in men is a Satan's sure trap. We may search as far back as we desire, and it is certain that we shall discover, unto our surprise and sorrow, that the church leadership has been so greatly deceived that in each period they fail to recognize the unrolling of the scroll. Okay, to us, each period would be Bashan, 1850 to 1890, when the scroll unrolled in 1890 for the Adventists, Jones and Wagner. It's righteous by faith. And then they failed to recognize when the scroll unrolled in 1930 to start the Shepherd Rod movement as an advancement for the Adventists in the truth. And then they failed to recognize when the rod came to an end in 1970 as a third step and a third advancement of the truth for the Adventist. So, and as the blinded multitude took the side of the corrupted leaders against the revealed truth, they split Elohim's church into numerous sections. Thus, by the defeating of the foremost, Satan has been able to engage them to labor for him and thereby to overthrow the church as a body. For the ascertaining of the accuracy of the foregoing statement, it would not be necessary for the committing on the facts beyond the first advent of the Yahshua. Therefore, a brief survey of the Christian era shall be considered here. Satan had drawn the first the dirt brush over the eyes of the highest human intellect at the close of the Old Testament dispensation. For the spiritual eyes are so skillfully plastered that they could not see a bolt of the lightning as bright as the sun and the dark as night. For the fulfillment of the prophecy, the miracle surrounding the birth of Yahshua, his spotless character, his unselfish labor, and wonders in every step, touch, look, and act, filled the very atmosphere with the divine love. Men who were destitute of the sense of the sight from their birth felt the healing power of the Infinite One. The blind saw the Yahweh of glory and praised Yahweh, but the religious teachers of the Israel were not affected by the power that moved even inanimate objects, for the earth quaked and the sun veiled his face. The rocks were rent and the graves were opened. The dead arose and beheld the Son of Elohim. But the proud Pharisees, priests, and rabbis, esteemed as never erring, could neither feel, see, nor hear. There is no wonder greater than the one written by the actions of the blind leaders of that age. John, speaking of the experience, says, "In him was life, and the life was the light of man. And the light shineth in darkness, and the darkness comprehended it not." John 1, 4, and 5. Every possible ray of the light pointing unto the coming of the Lamb of the Elohim had been given unto the once chosen people. But it profited them not. Said the Yahshua, "If therefore the light that is in thee be darkness, how great is that darkness? Would that these experiences could arouse the leaders and the people of this present time from self-confidence and counterfeit security unto an earnest search of the positive Bible truth." For the early Christian church, in the like manner, was dragged into the Dark Ages. As soon as the apostles passed away, Satan marshaled his agents, men of the renown, into the church. For the already blinded leaders laid their hands on men, not from the viewpoint of the consecration, really from the distinction, and thus made them shepherds of the flock. In the darkest hour of the apostolic congregation, Elohim, by the hand of the Luther, call the attention of the multitude unto the terrible deception that few were ready to listen to the humble monk. One would imagine that the most intellectual would have been the first to see the light in the plain, thus said Yahweh. Luther, with a great struggle and at the risk of his life, founded the Lutheran denomination, but as he passed away, that movement in the light manner was corrupted and hardened against the new light on the word of Elohim. As John Knox came with the additional truth in 1543, the leaders of the Presbyterian, of the Catholic Church refused to be interested, or the leaders actually of the Lutheran Church refused to be interested. Thus necessity gave birth to the Presbyterian denomination, and that's what John Knox represented. These experiences. So apparently John Knox was a member of the Lutheran Church. But Yahweh brought him an additional doctrine, like he did Viti Hala for the Advent, and he introduced it to the Lutheran Church, and they refused it, so that gave birth to the Presbyterian denomination by John Knox. These experiences have been repeated with the Wesley, Campbell, Miller, and White. See the Shepherd Rod, Volume 1, page 32 to 114. So I'd like to make a comment on what I just read and said. So as John Knox was a member of the Lutheran congregation, And the Holy Spirit came to him as a, Yahweh brought the Holy Spirit to him as a, another doctrine to be to go with the Martin Luther's doctrine of righteousness by faith. Well, the Lutheran Church refused to listen to John Knox, and John Knox was one of their own members. Just like V.T. Hodges was one of the old members of Seventh-day Adventists. They refused to listen to Hodges. Okay, so, and then when the Presbyterian Church was organized, and then Yahweh brought on a new messenger with a new doctrine, and that was John Wesley. And John Wesley was no doubt a follower of the Presbyterian Church at the time that he got the doctrine of grace. So the Presbyterian Church wouldn't listen to John Wesley and accept his additional doctrine of grace to go with their two that they had. So John Wesley had to start another protest organization called the Methodists. And then the Methodists repeated the same thing when Alexander Campbell came on the scene with another doctrine, baptism by the immersion. The Methodist Church refused to accept him and his doctrine. And he was no doubt a member of the Methodist Church at one time, Alexander Campbell. So he had to continue on with a new Protestant movement and called the Baptist movement or the Christian movement. And it's likewise, William Miller came with a new doctrine of the Trinity prophecy, and only 50,000 came out of all the fallen churches to follow him. They did do that. Then those fallen churches was the ones that was raised up out of the Dark Ages, the Lutheran, the Presbyterian, the Methodist, John Wesley, Alexander Campbell's Baptist. Those four main Protestant churches was what were considered as fallen churches in 1833 when William Miller came on the scene with the 2300 day prophecy. And then William Miller refused to accept the additional light of the Sabbath that the Adventists brought in 1844. So he and all of those 50,000 followers from the four previous churches, they all went back out into where they came from, out into Babylon. Okay, so now Ellen G. White comes along, she carries a message. And the first time the Adventists were tested on a new message was in 1888 by Jones and Rader, and the majority of the Adventists rejected that. They had to have a 40-year spiritual fast from 1890 to 1930, and then B.T. Hall, a member of the Adventist Church, Sabbath school teacher, emerged with a new doctrine for the church, and they rejected that. And then Verus Johnson emerged in 1970 with a new doctrine from the Davidians, and they rejected Verus. And then Elijah David emerges with Elijah's message in 2002 at Gilead Center, and Verus Johnson orchestrated and was a leader in causing all of his congregation to reject this new truth of Elijah. So nothing has changed, folks. Nothing has changed from the beginning of time. Let us go on. These facts concerning Satan's sure traps echo and re-echo with the loudest wail to arouse a sleeper at this particular time. Hear the trumpet sound. Shake thyself from the dust. Arise and sit down, O Jerusalem. Loose thyself from the bands of thy neck, O captive daughter of Zion. Isaiah 52:2. Prejudice with a dependence upon men, a confidence of having all the truth, and that there is the need of none has devoured more souls than any trap ever devised by the enemy of the mankind. For the class who accept the decisions of others without investigating for themselves and refuse to be interested in the hearing and reason of the scriptures have been deceived concerning present truth in every age. For the wisdom of this world is foolishness with the Elohim. For it is written, he taketh the wise in their own craftiness, and again, the Yahweh knoweth the thoughts of the wise, that they are vain. 1 Corinthians 3:19-20. Men who are esteemed great by the world, Elohim can seldom use. In the general, the great educators of the age are carnal-minded. Therefore, the product and the schools of men is enmity against the Elohim, because the carnal mind is enmity against Elohim, for it is not subject unto the law of Elohim, neither indeed can be. Romans 8:7. If the Elohim would use them, they must first, with the great apostle, deny themselves, said to Paul, to preach the gospel not with the wisdom of words, lest the cross of Yahshua should be made of none effect. For it is written, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise, and will bring to the nothing the understanding of the prudent. 1 Corinthians 1:17-19. And I, brethren, when I came unto you, came not with the excellency of a speech or of wisdom, declaring unto you the testimony of the Elohim. For I determined not to know anything among you save Yahshua Messiah and him crucified. And I was with you in weakness and fear and in much trembling. And my speech and my preaching was not with the enticing words of the man's wisdom, but in the demonstration of the Spirit and of the power. 1 Corinthians 2:1-4. Elohim took Moses to the desert, and there under his supervision he trained him for the 40 years. When Moses unlearned all he had learned in the schools at the Egypt, then only was Elohim able to use him for an instrument of his mighty arm. When Moses felt capable to deliver Israel from the Egyptian bondage, he failed. But when he saw himself helpless, then he was strong. If Elohim should give great light to a man who is high in his own esteem, and held likewise by the world, man would glorify himself and rob Elohim of the glory. At this time, Yahshua answered and said, I thank thee, O Father Yahweh of heaven and earth, because I have hid these things from the wise and prudent, and hast revealed them unto babes. Matthew 11:25. Elohim reveals himself through the instrument in ways least suspected by men. Thus he performs a miracle by making impossibilities possible, revealing his power and arousing the sleeper with the light and voice divine. Men of the distinction have seldom accepted any light upon the word of Elohim, simply on the value of his truth. This class generally accepts biblical truth after it becomes popular and when preached by men esteemed higher than themselves. Said the prophet, cease ye from man whose breath is in his nostrils, for wherein is he to be accounted of? Isaiah 2:22. It is better to trust in the Yahweh than to put confidence in a man. Psalms 118:8. For the prophet Micah, looking forward unto this time of the carnal security, says, trust ye not in a friend, put ye not confidence in a guide. Micah 7:5. For the Elohim's people must learn to look unto him only, depending upon the plain, thus saith Yahweh. He may use a human instrument for the communicating of the light, but it will shine on the never-erring word of Elohim. Such light will dispel sin and rebuke the sinner, exalt Yahshua, glorify Elohim, and debase men. For the lofty looks of men shall be humbled, and the hardness of men shall be bowed down, and the Yahweh alone shall be exalted in that day. For the day of the Yahshua of the host shall be upon everyone that is proud, and lofty upon everyone that is lifted up, and he shall be brought low. Isaiah 2:11-12. For the Satan knows how to deceive so that it cannot be easily detected. For he studies the inclination of the people, and the thing which appeals most he sets as a trap. Because the generation is with the trusting in the human intellect and are willing that others should think for them, for the devil will present to this class the most dazzling personality the world has ever looked upon, said the apostle. And no marvel, for Satan himself is transformed into an angel of the light, 2 Corinthians 11:14. For the Elohim's instrument for the communicating light upon his word will be the opposite unto those of the Satan. I thank thee, O Father, Yahweh of the heaven and earth, said the Yahshua, because thou hast hid these things unto babe. And are these things in the wise and prudent, and hast revealed them. Let's read that again. Now thank thee, O Yahweh Elohim of the heaven and earth, said to Yahshua, because thou hast hid these things from the wise and prudent, and hast revealed them unto babes, Matthew 11:25. Under the prophet Isaiah, it was revealed that Elohim will use humble men to debase the proud. For behold, the Yahweh of the host, doth take away from Jerusalem and from Judah the stay and the staff and the whole stay of bread and the whole stay of water. For the mighty man and the man of war, the judge and the prophet and the prudent and the ancient, the captain of the 50, and the honorable man and the counselor and the cunning artificer, and the eloquent orator, and I will give children to be their princes, and babes shall rule over them. And the people shall be oppressed, every one by another, and every one by his neighbor. For the child shall behave himself proudly against the ancient, and the base against the honorable. Isaiah 3:1-5. Said to Yahshua, whosoever therefore shall humble himself as this little child, the same is the greatest in the kingdom of the heaven. And whosoever shall receive one such little child in my name receiveth me. Matthew 18:4-5. For a brief summary of the leopard-like beast, it has been previously proven that the leopard-like beast, by his 7 heads and 10 horns, is a representation of a universal system. For the four beasts of the Daniel 7, namely the lion, bear, leopard, and the nondescript, were shown in the vision as 4 universal empires coming up one after another. Thus, prophecy as well as history proves that Babylon, Medo-Persia, Grecia, and Rome succeeded each other. This unbreakable chain of the 4 links makes it impossible to intersect any one of the 4 beasts with the universal system. Therefore, the leopard light must come in line after the 4 beasts, as the 10 horns of the nondescript beasts represented 10 kings that were to arise from the Roman monarchy. For the crowns on the horns prove that the leopard-like beast represents the period after the fall of the Roman monarchy, at which time the 10 kings received their kingdom, as he also came out from the sea. It is evident that he too was to be created as a result of the wars. That's the fall of the Roman monarchy, gave birth unto a 5th beast. His mouth of a lion, feet of a bear, body of a leopard, and 10 horns show that he is a descendant of the Babylon, Medo-Persia, Grecia, and Rome. As he opened his mouth in the blaspheme for the 42 months, or 1260 years, it is undeniable that he represents the papal period from 538 A.D. until 1798 A.D., for the time in which the papal head received his deadly wound, but as his wound was to heal sometime after 1798, it is evident that he also represents this world's history after the imprisonment of the Pope Pius, the sixth up until the time his deadly wound was healed. These periods give birth to Catholicism and Protestantism. It would have been unwise and useless to divide this prophetic beast if the symbols would fall or would fail for the revealing of the Protestantism as they do Catholicism. Before the 1260 years ended in 1798, the four Protestant denominations were already in the existence, namely Lutheran, Presbyterian, Methodist, and Christian or Baptist. But after 1798 came the First Day Adventists, William Miller, 1833, with the 2300 Day Prophecy and the three angels' messages, and the Seventh Day Adventists, 1844 to 1929, completed his 7 heads. Okay, as the Protestantism fell by the declaration of the second angel's message after 1844, And as the symbol of Revelation 13 and 19:30 reveal that the 70 Adventists wandered after the beast, the world, these two incidents healed the wound and drew the blasphemy over all seven heads. So can you see now, when Brother Johnson apostatized in 2002 as the last angel in charge of the candlestick of Laodicea, he'd been in charge of the seventh head. And whenever he apostatized, that was the time when the wound was healed. And then Brother Johnson drew the blasphemy over all seven heads when he apostatized in 2002 at Kermit, Texas. Thus, the complete fulfillment of the symbolical prophecy revealed the truth of the beast, as all other sects are but offshoots from these seven bodies. The heads included all Christendom up to 1930. As the prophetic word of the Elohim says, all the world wanted after the beast. Well, all the world didn't wonder after the beast until Brother Johnson closed out the last chapter for the Seventh-day Adventist Church in 2002. That's when the whole world wondered after the beast. All seven heads, then, as you see in the prophecy, and on the V.T. Hollis chart, where it shows this woman sitting on the head of these seven heads, this woman sitting on the seven heads, all Christendom, shows that all the world wondered after the beast, and that woman didn't take charge of the Seventh-day Adventist Church until 2002 when Brother Johnson gave it to her. So he says, and all the world wondered after the beast, worldliness. So when Brother Johnson said, well, we're going to keep celebrating birthdays, when he brought the book back to me, Fossilized Cousin, says, well, we understand, we know what the book says, but we read it. But we're going to continue doing birthdays. In other words, we're going to continue on holding on to Babylonian, Egyptian, pagan festivals, and we're going to continue to wander after the beast. Okay, so the Adventists started wandering after the beast when she apostatized in 1890, rejected Jones and Wagner. That's when she started wandering after the beast, but she culminated it at Kermit, Texas, 2002, with Gilead Center, by acknowledging we're going to continue wandering after this beast, and we're going to put our seal to these seven churches now. And when he did that, that's when Yahshua took the reins in his own hand, and he handed them over to me. And not after the head papacy, denotes that they have wandered after the world and not after Catholicism. Out of this great apostasy, the message of the Revelation 7:1-8 will seal and save 144,000 saints from the SDA Church who shall never taste death. But the message represented by the angel of Revelation 18, with whose glory the earth is to be lightened, will call out from the world the great multitude of Revelation 7:9. Elohim, who is so particular for the good of his church in the revealing of his truth unto his people, has presented unto us wonderful pictures of the historical events, which is the evidence of the love everlasting for the Israel his chosen, the first fruits of his harvest. That's the Elohim of the Jacob, thousands of years in advance, had laid his plans to present unto his people a work of the prophetic art with a divine touch. End of our subject on the leopard-like beast. We have about 10 minutes left. We're going to continue on now with our next subject, the two-horned beast of Revelation 13:11-18. As John beheld the vision with the intense interest, his attention was directed to another striking object. So when did the leopard-like beast come to his end in our day? 2002 at Kermit, Texas. Okay, when the two-horned beast then arrived on the scene? 2002 at Kermit, Texas. What was the sign that the two-horned beast had arrived, the ruler of this, representing the the ruler of this nation, representing this nation, period. And that was the 9/11, the downing of the Twin Towers in New York City, or New York, yeah, New York City, and Manhattan. And I beheld another beast coming up out of the earth, okay, earth and prosperous the United States, and he had two horns like a lion, and he spake as a dragon, Revelation 13:11, just about the time that the second and last stage of the nondescript beast was to terminate. Another earthly power was to come upon the stage of the action according unto the vision. So, when the leopard-like beast terminated in 2002, right here in the United States, he terminated his power at Washington, D.C. And what was the sign of the termination? The presidential election, when President Clinton turned his power over to his successor, George Bush Jr., and he became the president there 2001, 2000, after 2009, representing a little two-horned beast. And Clinton was the last president that represented the leopard-like beast that we just talked about. In other words, that was a leopard-like beast's time period was up through the Clinton administration clear up to 2001. 9/11, this was a sign that they had there's a changeover in the making. Okay, it is wonderful to note how accurate the symbols are, even unto their proper time and order. For the beast, having lamb-like horns, promise of the growth, is an unmistakable symbol of a nation slowly arising as from a small pine to a mighty empire. Well, the little two-horned beast, he rose in 1776. There's no question about this. He came on the scene of action at the time when the colonies, the 13 colonies, fought against Britain and won their independence as a sovereign nation from Great Britain in 1776. Okay, so he says, the lamb-like is descriptive of the government arising in 1776 A.D., see the Great Controversy, 439-441. But she came into power in 2002. I'm talking about to set up an image to this beast that just passed off the scene, the leopard-like beast, and to orchestrate the New World Order to put it into operation that was advertised by George Bush Sr. in 1991 when he was closing out his presidency and turn it over to Bill Clinton, he announced the New World Order. Then his son, George Bush Sr., that succeeded Bill Clinton as president, he put it into operation. This beast has been accepted as a symbol of the United States, therefore our intention is not to bring forth facts pertaining to its application. Our aim is, as previously stated, to briefly connect one beast with another, by the throwing light upon the symbols which have not been understood. It will be noticed that every beast representing the New Testament time has 10 horns, except this one. For we repeat that the 10 horns stand as a symbol of the universal system. For this fact proves that the two-horned beast represents a local government. As the civil powers or governments are symbolized by the horn, this particular beast having two, it is evident that the nation represented by this symbol shall have a double form of the government. As John says, the beast spake as a dragon. It clearly reveals that it is to repudiate its constitution. And the Elohim given a liberty of his subjects will be taken away. So, now, when was our Constitution repudiated? 2009, when George Bush Sr. had the presidency over to Obama, the guy from Kenya, that was born in Kenya, the nondescript nationality of the black, white, Muslim, he's the same thing as a nondescript beast. And he's the same thing as that pale horse, the fourth one of the apocalypse at the cross. He's a nondescription. You don't know what he calls himself, Christian, We know he's Muslim. He can be anything he wants to be. He's like a chameleon. He can change his colors, change his religion, anything he wants to be when he needs to be. Let us continue. According, see, it says, for the beast spake as a dragon, it clearly reveals that it is to repudiate its constitution, and the Elohim given liberty of his subjects will be taken away. So here's your prophecy right here. Revelation 13:12. This power is to imitate the beast before him, the papal rule, and he exercised all the power of the first beast before him. Okay, and caused the earth and them which dwell therein to worship the first beast, whose deadly wound was healed. So, who are they worshiping then? They're worshiping this little two-horned beast. Okay. As long as the United States is still in existence and it still has a government at Washington, D.C., then it is operating as the land of the two-horned beast, and he's the one that's in charge. Okay, but when the government changes here in the United States from this little two-horned beast that's been run by Obama and company, when it changes then to an typical House of David, the everlasting kingdom of David, then that's when you will get the identity then that woman has transferred from the seven heads. She's ruling over all the churches here in the United States, the little land of the two-horned beast. And as soon as that seven heads are transferred to that scarlet-colored beast in Revelation 17, then that will be a sign that the little two-horned beast is through. The scarlet-colored beast then is ruling the world for just a short season. On the with the woman in charge of it, Mystery Battle, Revelation 17. Okay, so folks, we're right there now. This is where we're at. For Yahweh is setting up the everlasting kingdom of heaven that is going to challenge this beast kingdom and going to bring it to its end. That fulfills Daniel 7:26, to take away his dominion, to consume and destroy it unto the end. The kingdom has been given to the saints of the Most High to accomplish it. Let us continue reading. If this great nation should be presumed upon the conscience of its subjects by the legislation as to how they may or may not worship, it would be contrary to the provision in its constitution, speaking as a dragon, quoting the United States Constitution, the First Amendment concerning religious matters states, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. If this country should repudiate this amendment, it will completely meet the symbolical specifications of the following verse discloses the fact that the old dragon shall exercise his power to deceive as many as possible, and he doeth great wonders so that he maketh fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men, and deceiveth them that dwell on the earth by the means of those miracles which he had power to do in the sight of beasts, saying unto them that dwell on the earth that they should make an image to the beast which had the wound by a sword and did live. Revelation 13:13-14. Thus he is to exercise persecuted powers as well as the working of miracles. Now, I'm going to back up a little bit. I have a little comment to make on what I just read. He says, he deceiveth them that dwell on the earth by the means of those miracles that he had power to do in the sight of men. One of those powers? And he doeth great wonders so that he maketh fire come down from heaven on the earth. And that's exactly what happened. He made fire come down from heaven on the earth, striking those twin towers, our government orchestrated that little setup. They were the ones that are responsible for that hoax of bombing those twin towers from the air, making fire come down from heaven, and disintegrating those two buildings by imploding them with pre-transplanted bombing and arsenal equipment with nuclear bombs placed in strategical places in those two twin towers. And they also placed, in the third building that came down, they placed bombs in it too, And the planes didn't hit that third one, but they still detonated and brought it down along with the other two. So there were three buildings brought down altogether. And they said in that third building there was at least 200 years worth of archives of the history of our government and all the atrocities that our government had done. They had them stored in that third building. And then they brought that building down, they loaded it up in dump trucks, and they took it out and put it on a ship and took it out and dumped that 200 miles offshore in the bottom of the ocean. All the evidence of that bombing of those three buildings ended up in the bottom of the ocean 200 miles off of shore. This brings us to the close of our contacts as at the 11th hour, calling us number 11, click on our audio archives, hear this message and more. We will close now with a song. Is my name written there? Thou care not for riches, neither silver nor gold. I would make sure of the heaven never enter the fold. In the book of thy kingdom, with its pages so fair, tell me, Yahshua, my Savior, is my name written there? Is my name written there on the page white and fair in the book of the kingdom? Is my name written there? Now my sins they are many, like the sands of the sea, but the blood of my Savior is sufficient for me. For the promise is written in bright letters that glow, though your sins be as scarlet, I will make them like snow. Is my name written there on the page white and fair in the book of the kingdom? Is my name written there? Oh, the beautiful city with its mansions of light, with its glorified beings and pure garments of white. When no evil thing cometh to destroy what is fair, for the angels are watching. Yes, my name's written there. Yes, my name's written there on the page white and fair in the book of the kingdom. Yes, my name's written there.